Chapter 139, Godric's Hollow. It was nearly Christmas when Hermione discovered Grindelwald's mark tucked away in her copy of the Tales of Beedle the Bard. Christmas had been their agreed-upon day to meet Ron at Godric's Hollow, though Harry wanted to go a day early to visit his parents and Bathilda Bagshot. Once they had Ron, they would be on the move again, and probably plotting how to break into Hogwarts once more. Harry's potion experimenting progress was hampered mostly by his lack of test subject, once Draco had caught on, and by his limited supply of unicorn hair and different kinds of blood. His own blood seemed to have the best effect. The day he'd badgered Draco into trying his best guess, Draco had been more interested in stealing one of Hermione's books on alchemy that day than continuing his experiments with stone mice. The next day, however, Draco appeared to steel himself before continuing his own spell research, and Harry hadn't been too sad to stop feeding Draco potions. The dark effect, or whatever you called it, seemed to have a cushioning effect on the mind in regards to horrors like exploding mice. Harry thought, perhaps, sometimes, he could use a cushioning effect on his own mind. But then he thought about Voldemort and desisted in this line of reasoning. Harry had been surprised that Draco didn't push to return to check on his parents, but Draco had shrugged in complete unconcern. "They'll be happy enough once I'm a war hero." And so they came to Christmas and Godric's Hollow. In another lifetime, Harry had never had a home to truly call his own, a family to have awkward holidays with. He wasn't able to talk to Sirius about his parents as Christmas rolled around, or call up memories of dinners with Dudley and Sirius talking about bands. Sirius never told him the tale of how he and James decided it was time to stop playing pranks and start really joining the war. In this lifetime, Godric's Hollow meant Ron, a chance to learn about Dumbledore, a chance to say goodbye and hello. And wasn't there a song about that? To his parents. Harry wondered, as he drank his polyjuice, if it really was addictive. Hermione and Draco were quiet during his part of the trip to Godric's Hollow, allowing Harry space to think. Perhaps too much space, he thought dryly, as he brooded and looked at gravestones. Ron would have been talking nervously, and it would have been really peaceful knowing someone else was nervous. He looked at the ruined house his parents had lived in and thought about what Sirius would think of this place. He'd like the sign, but would he ever come here? No, Harry thought. Not and see the signs of his worst failure. This was something Harry could never share with him. It tore his thoughts uncomfortably close to something he'd been managing to avoid thinking about. Snape's part in his parents' murder. They never had a chance to talk about it. And that was certainly not a moment Harry was going to ask Voldemort to mediate. Harry had found out, and then Dumbledore had died, and everything had cascaded into this horrible, inevitable flood of carefully planned events. Dumbledore not even needing to be alive to carefully orchestrate events in Harry's life. In a way, it was reassuring that Dumbledore really had been on the side of good. What was that line from Lord of the Rings that Harry had read so many years ago? Someone evil would seem fairer and feel fouler. Voldemort certainly could seem very fair, very reasonable, very righteous whenever he wanted to, even when he was suggesting you kill yourself or murder kittens or something. Dumbledore mostly seemed crazy, secretive, and somewhat annoying. Merlin, Harry missed the old coot. And then Harry's musings were interrupted by a muffled old woman who invited them back to her house. He and Hermione engaged her in conversation, if it could be called that, with Draco hanging back as lookout as agreed. Bathilda Bagshot did not inspire confidence. Harry went upstairs with her at her request, distracted by the picture of the merry-faced thief. The stairs were steep and narrow. Harry was half tempted to place his hands on stout Bathilda's backside to ensure that she did not topple over backward on top of him, which seemed only too likely. Slowly, wheezing a little, she climbed to the upper landing, turned immediately right, and led him into a low-ceilinged bedroom. It was pitch black and smelled horrible. Harry had just made out a chamber pot protruding from under the bed before Bathilda closed the door, and even that was swallowed by darkness. "Lumos," Harry said, and his wand ignited. He gave a start. Bathilda had moved close to him in those few seconds of darkness, and he had not heard her approach. "You are Harry Potter?" she whispered. "Yeah, I am." She nodded slowly, solemnly. "Have you got anything for me?" Harry asked, but she seemed distracted by his lit wand tip. "Have you got anything for me?" he repeated. Then she closed her eyes, and several things happened at once. Harry's scar prickled painfully. The dark, fetid room dissolved momentarily. He felt a leap of joy and spoke in a high, cold voice. "Hold him!" "Excuse me," Harry thought. Vision strangely doubled as he felt the connection take hold, even as he stayed put in his body. "I can hear you, you know. I'm trying to concentrate on something. Can we do this later?"
"Oh, of course, Harry," Voldemort purred happily. "We'll talk soon."
Harry went back to his conversation, running a hand through his hair in the vain hopes it would allow him to concentrate. Carefully, he concentrated on Dumbledore, on his parents, those memories so close to the surface. Occluding felt harder than usual, as if a heavy presence pressed against his mind. Harry really shouldn't have been surprised to find himself wrestling a giant snake, and yet he was. "She's a Horcrux," he reminded himself, as he failed to get any air and shout, failed to do anything. "A Horcrux! I have to... He was flying. Voldemort was flying. They were flying. It felt glorious, even as Harry was aware that his own body was somewhere back in Godric's Hollow, and he had no reason to be so happy. It was just echoes of Voldemort.
"If I die being strangled by a giant snake, I'm going to find that a little anticlimactic,"
Harry thought at him.
"Don't be silly, Harry. She's just holding you for me. Just as I am holding your mind here so that you can't struggle."
"Oh, goody."
"What shall we talk about?"
Voldemort thought cheerfully, as they flew through the chill winter sky, stars twinkling above them.
"We could talk about how you manage real flight,"
Harry suggested, trying to hide his panic.
"I've only managed a bit of hovering."
"Oh, it's a matter of raw power and will.
Not anything so simple as a charm. You probably have the strength for it, but I'm sorry, my dear. You are unlikely to have much opportunity for practice in the near future."
"I'm not your dear."
"I hardly think this is the best time to antagonize me based on my choice of language, Harry."
"Forgive me for being in a bit of a bad mood."
"Of course you're forgiven. You've given me a Christmas present, after all."
Harry was silent and enjoyed the sensation of flight. There was a strange sensation, as if hearing Voldemort's mental voice from far away. And then Harry felt Voldemort's anger press painfully against his mind.
"Stop that,"
Harry thought briskly.
"You'll burn yourself on my shields and fall out of the sky. And while that would be pretty funny, I don't know what it would do to us for both of us to be unconscious."
"As if that would happen."
"Quirrell died by burning,"
Harry countered.
"You really should count that as your first murder, Harry,"
Voldemort commented venomously.
"Precocious, starting at 11. Well, it's probably your influence."
How had Snape put it?
"You can't be good for a developing mind. And yet here you remain, stubborn and cheeky."
"That's covered in the prophecy,"
Harry offered.
"Not that I'm telling you what it is, but it does make the whole thing make more sense."
"You are being deliberately obnoxious."
"Of course. I can't do anything right now but distract you. Did we get away?"
"Not yet."
Harry fell silent at the burning cold tone, the murderous intent. They were striding into the fetid house, up the stairs, through a broken staircase and smashed furniture. They knelt by a giant snake with a slashing wound down her side and cast spells in impenetrably quick succession, cleaning and binding and covering the wound, their anger cold and all-encompassing, their memories drawn back to the other night when everything had gone wrong.
You have the Sword of Gryffindor,
Voldemort thought in a very quiet hiss. Master, Nagini hissed. Silence, Nagini. The snake fell silent, tongue licking the air fitfully. Harry felt something dreadfully like sympathy as Voldemort rested a hand on her dry scales and seemed to be gathering his thoughts. This, Harry thought, was the closest Voldemort came to love. This love of self outside of self. He loved Nagini because Nagini was him.
Harry, what were you doing here?
Harry had only a few seconds to think, and he thought these things in quick succession. At all costs, he must not let Voldemort know they were hunting Horcruxes. Voldemort was a walking lie detector. He had to tell almost all of the truth.
I thought she could tell me something about Dumbledore,
he thought carefully.
Dumbledore never talked about himself, and the story about his sister was... Go on.
They were still kneeling by Nagini's side, motionless as any snake ready to strike.
I noticed a picture of a handsome man from the Wandmaker's Vision downstairs,
Harry offered.
Who is he?
That got them up, standing abruptly and sweeping down the broken stairs to stare at the recently dusted photograph.
Gellert Grindelwald,
said Voldemort.
It must be. I don't understand. They were allies, until Dumbledore betrayed him. They were, yes, perhaps this was not a waste of my time after all.
Great, Harry thought to himself dryly. At least Voldemort seemed distracted.
To answer your question,
Harry thought grumpily,
I was visiting my parents' graves. I hadn't before. Christmas sentiment. Well, I did think you might.
They climbed the stairs again and looped Nagini around their neck, like a familiar, comfortable scarf.
Can I go back now?
Harry asked.
My friends will be worried. I have another errand to run tonight, so yes. How does the phrase go? Merry Christmas, Harry. Merry Christmas, you.
Harry fell into sleep with Voldemort's cold laughter echoing in his ears. That night, they dreamed of Harry's parents' murder and Voldemort's death. In the darkness of their shared sleeping mind, after the last green spell had rebounded, Harry offered,
Let's never visit Godric's Hollow again, until the war is over.
Agreed.
And they said nothing more to each other that night. Harry woke with the dawn, to Hermione's concern, Draco white-faced and grim, a broken wand, and Ron. At least something had gone right yesterday.